Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hello, everyone. This is Sharon Lecter. I am so excited about my guest today, because not only is he my guest, but he's also a dear, dear friend. Mark Victor Hansen is like a brother, a soulmate, and always been there to support me. Mark, thanks for being with us today.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
And for those of you, I'm sure you all know him, and you certainly know his he's a living legend from a standpoint of the impact that he's had on the world. I don't even know the latest number. Hundreds of millions of books of chicken soup for the soul around the world in many, many languages. And he's the one that created that, and he did it because he played big. And so as we talk about the Play Big Movement podcast, the first guest I could think of for this would be Mark Victor Hansen, because even having that incredible publishing success, he went on to start doing mega seminars, of course, big, of course, mega book, mega speaking. And then most recently, he's actually decided in the last few years that he's going to go even deeper into making the world a better place, getting into energy through natural power, been all over the world, China. And, you know, his resume is longer than mine, if that's even hard to imagine. But he's incredible, made a huge impact, and continues, and has always been a huge supporter and fan of mine. And we both have been dedicated to supporting kids and financial literacy. And those of you who have shared my story about when I made the decision to walk away from Rich Dad, it was Mark Victor Hansen who called me one day when I was kind of blue and just absolutely put love and heart, light into my heart, and really supported me at a very difficult time. So Mark, thanks for being with me today, and I'm so appreciative. We're so happy to have you back in Arizona.
Yes, I love living here. It is spectacularly beautiful out right now today as we're doing this.
It is, absolutely. So the Play Big Movement is, as Mark knows very well, I lost my son a few years ago and kind of put myself in a kind of a holding pattern. And I've decided, kind of got a few messages from him, I think, saying, kicking me in the, you know what, telling me to get back into the game. And so I want to support all of you that are watching and listening to this, the fact that we want you to play big. And we talk about the Play Big Movement as being number one in your field. Certainly Mark is. Living your legacy, Mark is doing that and creating maximum impact. So there's no better example of the Play Big Movement than Mark Victor Hansen. In addition, I should have mentioned, of course, because I know he's so proud of it, I think it was in 2000, you got the Horatio Alger Award, which is really an incredible small group of people who are self-made and have created impact. So it's just an honor to know him. And he was just with me at a fundraiser for Child Help. So his heart is with that organization as well. And his lovely bride, Crystal Dwyer Hansen, is an incredible woman that I dare and cherish, and happy to have them as close personal friends. Is she in there with you?
You want to just step behind and say hello to everybody on the podcast, honey?
You said...
She's on a call. She'll be back later before there's over, probably.
So
here, so everybody can see what she looks like there. She's
yes, beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, she's a stunner. But she's more wise even than she is beautiful, and she's absolutely beautiful. So I'm very, I wrote down 200, talk about thinking big. I wrote a book called The Miracles in You, and I wrote the 267 things I had to have in my ideal second wife, because my first wife didn't work out so well. So, you know, like we had to have the same values, spiritual beliefs. She had to have her own money. I don't want anyone marrying me for my wallet, or you have that do any any of you had that experience. So, you know, and I never told her that. And she was 267 out of 267, where I say, when you set a goal, you don't cross out, I got the milk, the eggs, butter. You write down victory. And, you know, obviously, and right before we got married, I'll just do a bonus to back to Sharon and her beloved husband, who we love a lot, Mike. They were kind enough to invite us to their ranch, and we just had a glorious weekend. And then it was such a good time. After we're done, they burned down the bar. They didn't. It got burned down. It was just too good to even believe that something like that could happen.
Yeah, it was a pretty scary thing. And actually, we were there for New Year's Eve, I believe it was. We were
celebrating. We danced all night until 2 or 3 in the morning, whatever that was. Yep.
And then it was January 12th, which was actually my birthday, just a week or so later, that the barn called Antlers, the bar just burned right to the ground. So it was kind of a sad thing, but we
partied hardy, though.
Yep, we had a good time. It was fun. But so, Mark, I want the opportunity to, for the people watching and listening to it, of course, they are all aware of chicken soup. And you, of all people, could have sat back and rested on your laurels. You have enough money, never have to work again. And yet you have such incredible passion for making the world a better place. Talk a little bit about, you know, when I say the Play Big movement, what it means to you, and then share a little bit about what you're doing as it relates to energy right now.
Oh, good. There's three questions there. But first of all, I want all of you to play big. As long as you're going to think, you might as well think big. And obviously, Sharon and I are in the self-help action writing zone. And you know, obviously, I've written 307 bestsellers. We've sold 500 million books, half a billion. Guinness Book of Records says I'm the world's best-selling author. I've written more than any of my colleagues. I've written with great people, everyone from Jack Canfield to Bob Allen to Art Linkletter, who the guy most of you are the younger that are listening, he created Hula Hoop, made $2 billion. Most of you wouldn't know who he is, but he did three TV shows and went from ABC to NBC to CBS. That'll never happen again because now there are like 500 stations or 5,000, whatever the number is, thanks to YouTube. Anyhow, and by the way, there's your thinking big. As for thinking big, we have to now because we're in a technology time. We've come into what I call, we've gone through the industrial age. We went through a lot of different ages, but the age we're in now matters, as it's an exponential age. And I only invest in exponential businesses, and I can talk about that in a minute. But when I was in Silicon Valley recently talking to the 20 smartest guys in Silicon Valley, I am not a Silicon Valley guy. As she said, I live here in Scottsdale, Arizona. I was told I was the best speaker there because those guys are all brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. But the one that I want to tell you about that's exponential is Dr. Ray Kurzweil. You all know him as the guy who runs Google X, but before that he created nanotechnology. And you all saw the movie he did called Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, right? You saw that, right? Mm-hmm. And what a nanobot is created because when I was getting my doctorate, I was with Bucky Fuller, and Bucky Fuller created a geometry, which I'm a master of, called synergetic, energetic geometry, or synergetics nowadays. But he created nano tubes and all that out of his geometry, which is great. But here's the exponential thing, now that I've overdosed you all, is that if you take steps, 30 steps, 1 to 30, linearly, that's 30. Exponential is 2, 4, 8, 16. By the time $1 hits 30 permutations, revolutions, it is $1 billion. This has never happened in history before. That's why America, the number I give you out of Forbes, I think is like we got 4,000 billionaires. Now, billions, 1,000 million. And now we have 5 companies this year in America only that'll be trillion. That's a trillion is 1,000 billion, and a billion is 1,000 million. And that's going to be, and the two that are fighting right now, who's going to get there first are Amazon and Apple. I personally think Amazon will, but you got Apple, you got behind that, you got Facebook, you got NVIDIA, you got a few others. That is unheard of, but that's what exponential growth is. And that's the kind of, you know, stuff we ought to talk about today. Have I gone too far, too fast?
No. I think we can all catch up and stay with you because that's what it's all about, is thinking bigger and allowing yourself to realize not only, you know, part of it is a lot of people watching and listening, Mark, I think one of the biggest obstacles they have is that lack of self-confidence. They don't feel like they have the right to think bigger. And we need to, you know, explode that myth and talk about the things that, you know, one person can truly make a difference. Look at what, you know, the impact that you've had. And it's amazing when people take that first step and they realize they can have a positive impact, it makes that second, third, fourth step a lot easier.
Okay, so four things to finish what she said. Number one, you got to know exactly what you want, which is the law of attraction in action, right? Birds of a feather flock together. Number two, it's got to be by law in writing. I mean, Old Testament said, write a thing, make it clear, it'll be established on you. Christ said, pray as though you've got it, and you'll have it. I'm shortening the syntax just because there's so much copy that you should know. And if you don't, you can go back and read my stuff or share stuff. Third thing is you got to do what she's saying. You got one and one equals 11. Like, you got a mastermind. You got a dream team. Mastermind, Andrew Carnegie created it, and she just made a movie about Andrew Carnegie. And I saw the original footage, and they've asked me if I want to do something with it, and we may pull that off. I got to talk to her afterward. But what he says, you create a third new invisible mind. And that's what my teacher, Bucky Fuller, would have said was called synergy effect. The behavior of the group is unpredictable by this parts or subassemblies. The point is, when Jack and I got together, we both sold a lot of books. Jack had sold 470,000 books is a number I remember on how to build self-esteem in the classroom, and which is what she's talking about, self-confidence. And self-confidence is inside out, not outside in. But if you have a mastermind partner, and by the way, if you don't, all you've got to do is believe that Sharon and I want more for you than you want for you, and you can go have it if you write it down. But what I teach different than anyone else that I know of is I got to write down too many goals, and I got over 7,000 in writing. I mean, and I've hit like 1,687 a couple of days ago. So, like, I want to be world's best-selling author, and I wanted to speak around the world, and I wanted to get paid this amount of money, and, you know, I wanted to marry that Crystal and all kinds of cool stuff. So, and then I want to make my goal during a lifetime, because I was with Paul Meyer, is that what do you want to do in your charitable life? And I've got a gigantic number written down, but that means I got to make a lot, you know, because some people say, well, you're rich, you ought to come free. And I told somebody today, I believe in free speech to articulate it, but I do not believe in free speech that I spend my life building my relationship capital and you guys take all the money. And I'm getting hired, just so you're clear. I'm going to Vietnam in August, and we're talking all over the place because I believe capitalism is the way out of communism. So they've read my book, 1 Minute Millionaire and Cash and Flash and Richest Kids in America. And I got some money books. Like, my dear friend Sharon has lots of money books, and she's endorsed mine. I've endorsed hers. But we got to get everybody to have fundamental abundance. That's the spiritual law. You know, it's the oldest spiritual writing ever. The first line in the Indian writing, the Upanishad, says, out of abundance, he or she took abundance, and still abundance remained. And once in a while, my critics in an audience will say, well, that's not Christian. Yeah, Christ said, I have come that you might have life and have more abundantly. The point is, you take a breath, you give a breath. That's the point. It's a reciprocity system.
And I think when you realize the better you do, the more you can give. And that's one of the things the philosophy you and I both believe in is, you know, and just like you said, we live in a free country with free speech and free markets and free enterprise. But that free enterprise allows you to make enough so you can do enough and continue doing good work. So, it's not money that's evil, it's the love of money.
Exactly. And the first line you said is Andrew Carnegie. I want you all to go to his two houses. The one in New York is at 95th and 5th Avenue. It took me 5 years to find it. It's owned by the Smithsonian. It costs you $5 to get in. So you can borrow it from Sharon and then you can go. Anyhow, the first line in the wall, a guy that was supposed to be illiterate on third grade education, they call him the wee Scotsman. Anyhow, is no man or woman gets rich without enriching all others. Well, that's exactly what Sharon just said. And then the second law, which we really love, is that authors are the wealth of the nation. Now, today, I think it'd be the wealth of the world. But remember, when he was coming through, we're talking about 1865, the printing press was still laborious. It was hand-driven. There was no machinery. You know, and a book cost $300. So, unfortunately, liberal educators call him a robber baron, and he's anything but. He created, I think the number is 4,782 libraries in America. Then he did the same in Europe. And you want to go to his house in Dornoch, Scotland, where I got to drive his little Rolls Royce and be in this wonderful mansion where he had, because they didn't have radios in that back in the 1860s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. Is that he had an organ player on every floor. It's such a cool idea, you know, because he could afford it. He was, in today's dollars, Andy would be worth $400 billion. And his little dossette dresses like him, looks like him, talks like him, and has a great Scottish accent. But then he said, well, how come you're rich and I'm not? We both read it. I said, no, you got to read it, and then you got to do the thinking and growing rich. You can't just do the thinking. You got to go take the activity to get rich.
That's right. We talk about very popular movie and book, The Secret. But I think, you know, and it was, certainly was fabulous. I know you played a role in that. But the, you know, we look at Napoleon Hill, who first wrote about the law of attraction in 1919. It was exactly what you just said. You know, you have to think good things for good things to happen, but you also have the opportunity to, you know, be enthusiastic, go the extra mile, actually do the work. You and I can say you're as hardworking as I am, and it's something that I don't call it work when you're enjoying it. You know that it's your mission and your passion, but you don't just sit back and expect things to fall in our lap.
I know. Nope. We both work hard. It took a lot to get here. And you asked me about our energy company. So what happened is that 2008, somebody came, one of the four guys who literally really invented the internet, Dr. Bill Ruana. And Bill said, I want to buy your company for a whole lot of money, which he did. And I'm very thankful. And I looked around and I said, well, in graduate school, Bucky said, Dr. Buckminster Fuller, Einstein's best student. If you don't know him, he 2,000 major inventions like geodesic domes and Maxine cars and rowing needles and 40 major books, but in 15 doctorates at Harvard in cosmology, cosmogony, strange stuff. Even the last doctorate was the Charles Eliot, whatever it is, professor of poetry, amazing guy. Anyhow, and he wrote ventilated prose. But Bucky said we'd run out of energy right now, and he wrote a book on that called Education Automation. I believed it, so I said, I'm going to get in the alternative energy business. Just real quick, if you've never looked at our videos at naturalpowerconcepts.com, Crystal and I were the first to invest in it, starting with $1 million and still putting in more. But we got 248 major patents, everything from, you call them pop-up windmills, but they're called folding blade turbines, being made now by a little company called Caterpillar, which I'm partners with, and they're only a $90 billion company, but they're amazing. And they're doing great stuff. They're the first autonomous cars, and they're doing autonomous vehicles that go into the mountain, so we never have to have anyone die in a mine anymore. Anyhow, they also do the biggest microgrids, which is a business I'm doing, because only half the people in the world have energy and water, which you say, well, what do I care about somebody getting stuck in an elevator? Well, if you're in Africa and Kenya, where I've been, and all over Africa, and you're stuck in an elevator for 6 or 7 hours, you're going to say, whoops, I wish they did have energy. And then you got to have energy to have water to have food to have abundance. And I'm in all parts of those kind of businesses. So we're in the most exciting time ever in the energy business. Talk about thinking big, is the world's biggest. It's 11, just in the U.S., it's 11 trillion, spelled with T, dollars a year. But nobody knows about it because it, up until now, it's been a monopoly. Well, I want to see microgrids, nanogrids, you know, little grids that run electricity, you know, and I think everybody's got to go to solar, because we just, one more line, then I'll let you ask anything you want, but we got to quickly, safely, satisfyingly triple the kilowatts, the energy per person, and get off petrochemicals or coal, because we've only got one little biosphere, and it right now is coughing, and you see that we've had the hottest days here in Arizona. Right now, I know volcanologists are saying that the 18, as we do this, we've never had a volcano with 18 holes spewing simultaneously on a big island where I used to own a home, next to Bill Gates, as it was. It just is not, it's not good. We're, the Mother Nature doesn't like what we're doing. Humankind is polluted, but we got to recycle it, clean it up. The truth is, we have the technology. What we lack a little bit is the political will.
Right, the will. Sure,
yeah. And by the way, you wrote a little book that I got to do the forward to about that.
Yep. So we were just in Bali in September, October, and that volcano was going off. So it is.
Ooh, yeah, that's right, Indonesia, and it's gone off more this week. It's had more problems.
Yeah, it has.
I love Bali. I've been there a few times, and matter of fact, our kids went there on vacation just a short time ago. So it's a.
Yeah, we were there, and I think it was like 2 or 3 days after we left, and they closed the airport for about 6 days. So we were able to get home before that. But it's something that you see it, and you realize, you know, there's somebody else in control, and we need to do what we can to preserve what we have and support it. So
And Mother Nature's always talking. You're exactly correct. And the trouble is that we don't have enough people listening. They say, well, that's Indonesia and it doesn't affect me. That's Hawaii. No. We live on, Bucky Fuller he created the term spaceship Earth in 1943. There's one little spaceship called Earth. We're all astronauts on it. We're traveling at 1,000 miles an hour through space. And as far as we can tell, we only got one shot. Now, there may be water elsewhere on other planets in the universe, but the closest planet is 25 light years away. That, at the speed of 1,000,000 miles an hour, that is 3,000 years. Now, nobody I'm familiar with or anyone listening on here, even though Ray Kurzweil wrote, if you live long enough, you can live forever. I don't plan on living physically forever, spiritually, yeah.
Well, I know we talk about, for those of you, you've heard Mark reference Buckminster Fuller. If you're not familiar with him, you look him up, because if you talk about playing big, talk about thinking big, there's nobody that thought bigger than Bucky. And he, and I think Mark, you're probably one of the few people around that really had, you were his protege and you learned from him, and incredible insight into so many different aspects of how the world works, and certainly related to the geodesic dome. And he felt that there was, he kind of talked about there being an energy grid around the world, didn't he?
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Bucky wanted to do an interconnecting electrical grid, and Bucky, thinking big, he said, let's make the world work for 100% of humanity and make us all physically, and you're in my business, economically successful. Well, how do you do that? Well, you can do it, but it's this stuff. It's thinking, because Bucky had a, and I did travel with him around the world for 7 years, is that Bucky, because I was a mentor. I mean, remember, my parents were basically illiterate Danish people, blue collar. And you know, all of a sudden I'm one of the first in my family to get a degree. And then I get hooked on Bucky, and I'm on a go a decade plan. I don't plan on ever leaving university because of Fuller. And then all of a sudden people said, well, you got to do something else here. And so I did. Anyhow, the point is that Fuller said, you know, we're the first time technologically starting 40 years ago that we could take care of everybody. It's never even been a chance. And then the interconnecting electrical network, Bucky created the idea that, you know, you turn on energy at 6 o'clock, let's say in New York, an hour later in the Midwest, an hour later in the Rockies, an hour later in here in LA, sorry, where I used to live. And then an hour later out in Hawaii, well, actually a little later than that in Hawaii, 3 hours later. But the point is you ought to take that energy, and now we ground volt it, waste it. We waste so much. It's just asinine. And it just, you know, what we need to do is recycle everything, make it clean. And obviously I own Metamorphosis Energy, which only does commercial solar. So we're doing the big data centers. We're doing the big universities. We're doing the big hospitals like here in Mayo. You know, I know we back them up with batteries, like 100 megawatt battery, which is big, big, big stuff. And then, so it's really exciting. And then we're cleaning up the whole environment. I own seven companies, but we own a piece of wastewater environmental technology, which is the president of the United States has said, look, let's make America energy self-sufficient, quit sending $1 billion a day to Saudi Arabia for petrochemical. And we find, all of a sudden they find the biggest find ever in Permian Basin. But what happens is when we frack, which has some downsides, any new technologies, disruptive technology, is going to have some breakdowns before you have breakthroughs, right? And so when you pull up fracking, you get H2S, which is sulfuric glass, instantly poisonous, invisible to human. Well, our company, Wastewater Environmental Technology, figured out how to clean that. Well, you say, well, that's nice. You guys are doing that in the oil patch. Well, we are, but we're also doing it here because we, Sharon and I live in the desert.
Yes, and we do.
We have plenty of water. We got six Lake Meads. There's two kinds of water, surface water and groundwater. Groundwater, but our groundwater, because of high population, is polluted, and our company is working on polluting that so we have adequate water, because we got, our state is 5 or 6 C's. We are, did you know we're the biggest cantaloupe, we're the biggest cotton, we're biggest copper. Copper, they can't do the copper. They only get 1/3 because they don't have enough water, which is interesting. So I'm going to change that, or help change that. You got cattle, you got cactus, and then you got my wife, Crystal. So there you go.
Well, I'll throw in cattle. We got a few cattle too.
Yeah, no, you got cattle. Cattle is one of the five. Yep. And the point is that, you know, all that pollution's got to be taken care of for the first time, because we're polluting ours. Here's my last line that I write a quote every day, like Napoleon Hill inspired me to do that, because he wrote them, I wrote them. Is it humankind has killed itself again and again on the planet. And the way they do it is the population gets big and then they self-annihilate because they didn't, in history, they didn't know how to clean up the water. Here in our great state, we have the Hanaunau Indians, and there are just too many of them. There are 200,000 here, and they pollute it, and that's why we have the Salt River. Nobody thinks why the hell that exists. Well, you got salt because you had too many people and too much concentration. I opened up all the pyramids in Guatemala, which was a great joy. And you say, well, what did you find? Well, they had 10 million people. We found it by the guy I went with, a Harvard head of archaeology, anthropology, flying over, changes the filters. And he said, oh my God, they're all those pyramids. They just got buried under 10,000 years of soil. So we went down there and we helicoptered from place to place because we were with a billionaire that said, you know, will you help write this up for National Geographic? I said, oh my God, what an exciting thing. Heck yeah. So, and that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to think big so you can do all these cool projects that nobody else can do that the world needs to know. And the Mesoamericans, you know, starting 15,000 years ago, built places that we can't build today, like I've climbed Machu Picchu. But the pyramids in Guatemala are bigger than the pyramids in Egypt. And we didn't even know they existed unless you'd studied and know to call or something. But I opened up San Bartolo and you see this artwork of these people really living at a very high level. So, and I know on the History Channel, they say, well, they're aliens that did it. I don't know who did it because we can't move 200,000 pound rocks now. The smart, and I hang out with all the engineers at GCU and ASU and MIT. And, you know, they're all friends, not all friends. A lot of them are friends, but they say, we don't know how to do that. And they must have levitation because we're talking about bringing rocks up 19,000 feet. Is this interesting, Sharon?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm sitting here thinking that people are listening and watching going, it's so easy for him to say, you're so out of our reach. So I want to like, let's bring us back down to earth, because how I want to go back to the beginning of Chicken Soup for the Soul when you guys first decided to do this. How many rejection letters did you get?
We got 144, and our agent, who is back with us again in a different way, fired us. We went to New York with a lovely guy who will go on name just because it would be besmirching maybe, but I'd written a book called Dare to Win, and we went to Berkeley at the time, and they said, well, we'll do it if you do 14 books, Dare to Win, Dare to Lose, Dare to Know God, number 14. And I said, great. And then all of a sudden we're number 3 years later, we're number one and number two, and they had taken it out under Jackson, my name, and Jack just did a little edit, and they said, we're gonna sue you if you don't finish this in a month, and we want to take Dare to Ask, and we made it Aladdin, which in the first year sold like 3.6 million. But what you said is more important. Every one of you starts the same, naked, helpless, ignorant. We all start there. The problem is you can't stay there. I'm rereading Napoleon Hill, How to Raise Your Salary, the original interview with Andrew Carnegie. Have you read that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Anyhow, for those of you watching, if you haven't read it, you go to a used bookstore, you go online, you can find it. It was expensive for me to buy it because I got one of the original copies. But the point is, the principle that Andy had no money, no education, but he had white hot burning desire. That's what I had to sell more books than anybody. And I'll take credit for, you know, Jack is a really hard, smart, third in his class genius and Mandarin scholar and, you know, Chinese scholar and all that. But I'm the one who figured out how to set the goals. You got to set outrageous goals if you're going to think big. So we said the first year we'd do a million and a half, a year and a half. Now, when we set those and we wrote that business plan and 144 people said, hit the road, Jack, I said, it's okay if you let him go, but you like me, I'm nice. But then I said, look, after we do that, we're going to sell 5 million books. Then we're going to sell 10 million books. Then we're going to sell, and you know, the point is, we sold a million and a half. We sold 1.3 million in a year and a half. So we did what we said, and our publisher made us go way beyond, almost to a vanity publisher, HCI, which people thought it meant Hanson Canfield International, but it was actually Health Communications International. Peter Vegzel, a guy owned it with a guy named Gary Seidler, when we came in, and Gary saw the benefit of our books and said, well, I'll take it if you buy 20,000 at $6 each, and I'll give you distribution. Well, he never gave us any distribution until we sold the 20,000. And overpaid for the books because he was printing them at like 35 cents each. And you know, you can't do that today. But the fact of the matter is we would have been better off being self-published probably. But and I hope Peter's not going to watch this, but because he would be uptight. But I can't change that. Anyhow, so everybody starts with nothing. And remember what I said, you got to figure out what you want and it's got to be in writing. We had written down what I call a wow of a business plan, and people read it. They threw it away or laughed at it or said, I mean, even Bob Proctor, who I'm very close with and Sharon's close with, said, you know, when you told me you were going to go out and sell 100 million books, he said, I never tried to put down anyone's goals, but I did not believe that that was possible because, you know, he'd written a book, which I wrote the forward to, called Born Rich, or at least one iteration of it, and endorsed a lot of, Bob and I have owned two companies together. I love him. Proctor, if you haven't heard him, is probably the reigning reading genius on Think and Grow Rich. Probably read it 400 or 500 times, whatever the number is, more than me, and I've read it a lot and own it, and as does Sharon. And Bob is, the Jewish term is mensch. He's got together, know he's got together, and his results click, and he's profoundly spiritual. The point is, and he does stuff, and one of the, page 36 of the paperback edition of Think Grow Rich says, you know, when you write your goal, you've got to visualize it basically beginning and end of the day for sure. And that's what I'm rereading, these old words of Andy Carnegie, and that's what he said, is basically he had a magnificent obsession. He woke up thinking about marketing and manufacturing steel, and he said, I got one other guy. Well, who did he get? He got Charles Schwab. That's the great-great-grandfather of Schwab, the stock guy, who, you know, that's, you know, anybody that's buying their own stock buys from him because it's $4.95 because he brought it available to the masses, which is a brilliant idea. So it is very exciting. So, but I didn't have any money. My parents didn't have any money. I paid my own way through school. And then, you know, I decided to become a speaker. I hope I'm not over answering this, but I'll just do it real quick. I'm in New York. I've gone bankrupt building geodesic domes. I tried to be Bucky Fuller in 1973 or two. And that just, I had to check a book out, how to go bankrupt by yourself, because I went bankrupt so fast because we couldn't get petrochemicals, which could happen again, you know, temporarily. We've got enough here, but we can't. The problem we're having in Permian Basin in Midland, Texas, and in Jail, New Mexico, is that we don't have enough materials here because we let a lot of stuff go to China and we're not making it. And we got to go back in business. And all these are opportunities. And I want all of you to become disruptive marketers. Figure out, like Sharon said, exactly what do you want? What are you passionate about? What it wakes you up in the morning that you want to beat in your chest and go conquer the world? And then you got to get a mastermind team member that, you know, will listen to you.
The power of association. So you want to solve a problem or serve a need, but don't try to do it alone.
You can't do it alone.
you got to find the right people, people that are strong where you're weak. And as you know, I often have said this too, I don't know whether I owned it or you own it, but the 1 + 1 = 11 is something that is so true, because you bring to the table your education, your background, your experience. But when you combine that with someone else's background, you get exponential results. And when you add a third, it's triple. So you have the opportunity to really create massive change. And part of it is, you know, as far as you, part of what we hold us back is that fear. And we talk about outwitting the devil. Mark helped write the foreword for Outwitting the Devil. It's how you break through that fear. And today, with what's happening in the world, whether no matter what your political beliefs are, there's a tremendous amount of discourse and fear. And you have to be even more dedicated to being steadfast in what you believe. Just like Mark said, you know, what is it that gets you up in the morning? What is it that gets you excited? Write it down. Have it everywhere so that it reminds you of the impact that you can make. Because for things to change, we all need to step up and answer the call. And if you've learned nothing else, is, you know, Mark Victor Hansen walks the talk, and he has passion beyond belief, passion to make this world a better place. But he started, as he said, with nothing, and he
with nothing
way he built his way, and he took those actions. Every one of you, you know, we're all where we are today because of the choices we made before today. But if you want something different, you have every opportunity, better than ever before in history, to create success in your life.
Exactly. So back to, because she asked me to do the very, very beginning. So I'm financially upside down. I'm hiding in the sheets for, you know, scared. Fear is false evidence appearing as real. I think Zig started that, but whoever started, and Napoleon Hill wrote the Fireside Chats and said, you have nothing to fear, but fear itself. Confront fears to make it disappear. And wrote us out of the depression for FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But I'm upside down. It's 1974. I decide I want to be a speaker. I'm living in Hicksville, Long Island, New York. I've got three or four roommates, all men. And I go to breakfast one day and we're all sitting there and I say, any of you know a young speaker that's not a cotton top, white hair, that's not a celebrity, that's not a lawyer, that's not a doctor, that just is out teaching and making money at it? And one of my roommates, a real estate guy, John, said, yeah. Oh man, there's this young guy that was a number one salesman at Kodak. He's your age, I think, out in Hopog, Long Island, New York. It's one of those momentous days that changed my life. So I've got now a $400 pitted window, permanently air-conditioned Volkswagen. I jump in that car at 8:30 at 9 o'clock. I'm sitting in the audience of Chip Collins, who's still one of my great friends. And he wows this audience. He's 5 or 6 or 10 years older than me. I don't know his exact age. I never even thought about that because I didn't care. But he was young, and I could relate to him, and he had hair. Both of us had hair then. Anyhow, and, you know, afterwards he got done. I said, hey, will you can I take you to lunch and tell me how you do this? And he said, well, he happens to be ambidextrous, which means you can write with the right and left hand. And he said, I took notes of what they're teaching me at Kodak, but then I wrote what I thought about it, and I thought better that I was the number one salesman, so I didn't think that guy up talking to us knew more than I did. So I said, I'm going to drop Kodak. I got enough money to float for 6 months. I'm going to go out and become a speaker. Well, he failed miserably at the front end. Just in a book I wrote called The Miracle of Tithing, Giving, which says you ought to tithe your thinking, your time, talent, and treasures. But the first story I have is Chip's, and Chip was broke. He had two kids. He had a great wife. And he's gone out and begged people to let him talk for him on Long Island, and nobody wanted to hire him. And he goes to the Catholic Church. He's very Catholic. He looks in his pocket. He's got, I think it was 37 cents, maybe been 67, puts it in the offering, comes back and is starting to walk out of the place. I got goosebumps telling you this is such a chicken soup story. And guy grabs his lapel and says, you Chip Collins? He said, guilty. He said, you came into my office last week to sell me a seminar, and I think I want you to come and do the seminar. Here's a check for $400. Chip just went, look at the goosebumps. He just went, I got a meme on my lip. It's a true story. I mean, that's how Jack and I know corroboration of truth. And one of the seven models we did to find chicken soup stories. And you know, Chip just could buy milk for his babies and had courage enough to make it. You know, one of the 13 principles in thinking rich, you got to have persistence. You got to hang in tough, and you can't know where it's going to make it. I mean, going to a Catholic church is not going to get him a talk. Right. And so he told me what to do. He said, you know, you got to stay out of the real estate business and just do the life insurance business, the bottomless pit for motivation. Go to general agents, managers. They're back then we had a yellow pages. I know that doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, I went through it, and he said, they're all corralled. They're all like, you know, McDonald's is always next to a Taco Bell just because, you know, the kid wants this and mom wants that, anyhow, or whatever. And so, you know, I knocked on the doors. He gave me the four questions. He said, by the way, the chance you make is 1 in 1,000. Nobody makes in this business too hard, and you'll give up. But call on 10 people, one will say yes. I went out knocking doors because I had nothing else to do. I'm in bankrupt and upside down, and this is what I wanted to do, is talk to people that care about things that matter, would make a life-changing difference, and I wanted to become the world's best-selling author. So I knock on 10 doors the first day in Long Island. I'm in Nassau, the county. There's two counties. And the 10th guy is the guy with Metropolitan. I walk in the office, and it's like 6 o'clock at night. I didn't have anything else to do, so I'm just out hustling 8 or 10 hours a day. And I did seminars 4 a day. I started at 6 in the morning, 1 at 10, 1 at 2, and 1 at 6, like this one. And in between, I called on. But this first guy I called on that said yes, Chip said, the question is, to close, is, do you want to cut the check or have your secretary cut it? He laughed. He roared. He weighed like 600 pounds. He was big. And he said, I'm a Tony. He said, hey, here, boy, here's the directory. You call everybody. You tell them Tony sent you. Well, man, I was sold. You know, I'm selling 1 in 10. The next day, I'm selling 2 in 10. Next day after that, 3 in 10. Pretty soon, I'm selling 10 out of 10 because you got to – I knew the concepts of Think, Grow Rich and could execute them, and I made money a couple times in my life. But now I am learning the insurance business. Each guy's giving me the audio tapes from National Association of Life Underwriters. I can name all the names. But the bottom line is we started with little meetings, got to this company meetings, and there's 1,800 major insurance companies, and most of you have never heard of any of them, like Guardian. You'll know Metropolitan. You'll know Prudential. You'll know State Farm. There's not one of them that I didn't work for during these years, and I'm still I'm doing a mass meeting here. I'd invite you to it here in a couple of days with all the richest guys in the whole world for Mass Mutual. It's one of the great companies. There's some really great companies, and that's one of them. And I think I'll do a bonus point here and say what I learned in insurance from old John Savage, a top guy, and I got it, one of my 10 honorary doctorates I got at Savage, University of Toledo. But Savage said the first, you got four wheels in the car. The first wheel you got to have is earning money. The second wheel is you got to be saving it. Third, you got to have life insurance. Fourth, you got to have investments. That's the wheels in the car. And you're a CPA. Am I any disagreement with any of that?
No, absolutely. That's right. Assets. Got to have the assets. Got to pay it. And then you have to protect them. Absolutely.
Boy, is that true.
All of you that have been listening, it's so important for you to listen. You know, all these, so many nuggets. I didn't want to stop you. You were just like sharing. But I want to draw to a simple concept. 10 calls to get one yes. You know, sometimes it's, you know, how many no's does it take to get to a yes? And never giving up, persistent perseverance, and knowing that there's always that next step and that next door of opportunity. But if you're not driving towards it, it's not going to open up for you.
And Ross Perot, I always taught his thing about when he left IBM, he was their number one salesman, and they wouldn't let him do the next thing that he was clear. He knew what the computer industry had to do. He could see the future. Like, I can see the future on energy. That's why I'm doing, we got to get the solar wind, geothermal tidal, pulsating waves, and all that. And I can talk to that. But Ross called on 80 people, started this company called EDS, Electronic Data System. The 81st person bought $4 million. So it's 80 into 4 million. I'm doing the math in my head. No, I'm doing it wrong. Correct it. But $50,000 for every time somebody said no. And that's how you got to look at it. You got to say, I'm getting paid for all these no's. And if Jack and I never did this until now, thinking if I divide 144 rejections into, we've done $2 billion gross value of just books, and then the $2 billion I started licensing. Because I am an omnivorous reader. Like, I hope you all are reading our self-help stuff. Like I said, the stuff that Sharon and I write. But I read everything. And I one weekend I read Spielberg's book and Lucas's book. And what they said, I'm going to synthesize it, but they made $800 million on ET, but $1.5 billion in licensing. Said the next day, Jack and I, if we weren't talking, we were meeting and writing our book. It took us 3 years to write the Chicken Soup series and figure out the 7 discernments that it took a long time. And our spouses both are gone now from our marriages, but we're both remarried, but they were not happy that we got that much rejection. They thought we were idiots. You know, if you have the biggest publishers in the world, Random House, Morrow, and Berkeley, all saying, get out of here. You guys don't know what you're doing. If short stories sold, we'd sell short stories. I said, we're not selling short stories. Anyhow, the point is we've gotten paid an enormous amount for those 144 rejections. And Jack kept saying, are you sure we can handle this? I said, look, the word is NEXT. You just got to keep saying next. Somebody's going to say yes. Yep. There's somebody out there that wants this, because I said, look, every audience gives us a standing ovation when we use these stories. It's not me saying it. The audience is saying, you have that story in a book. And I said, one way or another, we're going to get this thing done.
And now every publishing seminar, there's way too many of them out there happening with people who don't know what they're talking about. But they've all now gotten it. They say, you got to tell stories. You use parables. You got to tell stories. Well, guess who created that industry? Mr. Mark Victor Hansen.
Jack helped. Yeah. Jack is a hard worker. Absolutely. But he's the inside guy much more than I am. I'm the outside guy.
Yeah.
I'm the marketing guy. And
well, the two of you were quite the dynamic duo and have really changed the face of publishing as a whole, and created incredible opportunity for people to really find pathways to success. So for those of you that want to hear more, we're going to end this section of the podcast, and we're going to jump into the private Facebook page of the Play Big Movement. So I invite you to come join that, because we're going to go a little deeper into maybe the couple things like the lowest point of Mark Victor Hansen's life, and maybe talk about habits that he has. You've heard about, he just said about being a voracious reader. Maybe he's got another habit he's going to share with us. So for all of you watching right now, thank you so much, Mark. If they want to find you or contact you, how do they find you?
They can go to markvictorhansen.com, or they can go to our energy company is Metamorphosis, like a caterpillar becoming a butterfly, metamorphosisenergy.com. Dot US, because I'm a worldwide company and I want everybody to know I am proud to be from the US. So, as a matter of fact, you can't see it because it's on the bottom of my computer, but I have a giant American US flag. And the reason I do it is because when we're in China, which I've gone to for 22 years, I carry the computer showing the American flag because I really want them to know that America is the greatest country in the world. And knock on wood, and I can say why we're going to beat China and all that.
Thank you. And yes, both of us are proud Americans and proud of the opportunity. We do live in a land of opportunity and, you know, free to, as you and I are both huge proponents of free enterprise and free markets. So thank you for the country that we live in and the opportunities that it's provided. So thank you all for watching. And again, come join us and share this podcast with your networks and your friends, because an incredible gift from Mark being with us today. And we're going to have him back. And come join us in the private Facebook group, because we're going to start in just a second. We're going to go on to the next section with Mark.
While you're doing that, I'm going to step away for 1 minute.
Okay. Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.